Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the f*** are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the f*** is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
Now's my shit together, is my shit together.
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, no thanks, Nice and Jacks. I'm Tomorrow. Ricardo on the board. SP Futures down 475. NASDAQ futures down 25 cents. We may call that flat, I guess. So we had a big, huge update yesterday. Market seems to love the rebound of off the lows of a week ago Monday. Some of the stocks have made 500, you know, just a little something like $400 or $500 billion recoveries in their market caps. I don't think anybody does the math, but those are real numbers. So we're solidly up today, up till today. We'll see what happens. As of now, it doesn't look like any kind of reversal coming. We're just kind of hanging. We have Professor Kevin. I don't hear him. He must have.
Give me a second.
He might have muted himself.
Oh, there we go. He's connecting to audio right now. Give him a second.
All right, give him a second. He's connecting to audio. Kevin, unmute thyself.
It wasn't mute. My speaker wasn't working. I had to reconnect it.
You're Mr. Tech. How could your speaker have the balls to not work?
I slapped it around a little bit, and now it knows who's boss.
Oh, there you go. Things could be worse. Not that things are bad. Things are actually pretty good. We could be one of the two astronauts up there trying to get back on this Calypso that Boeing says is fine, but they're not sure the thrusters work. I'd take Boeing's word at this stage, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. Boeing is a source of truth, a source of competence, as is all of the government stuff it does and every aspect of government. I mean, my God, is there any part of government or government-related stuff that is competent anymore? I don't know. I'd have to think about that.
Let me give you an example that is very small, Kevin, very small, about the world we live in. As you know, I'm not Mr. Order Online. I still pay by checks. I still like go to the store. I'm, for lack of a better term, I guess I'm a Luddite. But I broke out of it last week. Instead of going down to the outlet mall and buying underwear, which people have to do a couple times a year, I'm going to get these online. Plus, they sent me some coupon because I go down there enough. Well, I don't go that much, but I mean, I've been going for a while. And plus, I said, you know what? My new truck needs some new floor mats. So on the same day, I get online and I order the floor mats and I order the underwear. Now this is a small sample, I get it. So the floor mats, by the way, they're coming from Willowbrook, right? These are WeatherTech. They're coming from Willowbrook. And I get the thing, by the way, your floor mats will be delivered tomorrow. This is on a Tuesday. Okay, Tuesday, Wednesday comes and goes, Thursday comes and goes, no floor mats. On Friday I get a thing saying, they're out for delivery from Greenwich, Connecticut. Okay, then. Your floor mats will be delivered on Sunday. So they pay some poor schmo to deliver them on a Sunday. Now, the shipping couldn't have been $15. Tell me how much they lost on that shipment. How many times were those things handled? 20?
Oh, could have been. My guess would be that that they thought they had stock locally and they didn't.
No, that's where they actually went from Willowbrook to Connecticut.
Oh, you had the tracker on it?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, somebody bleeped up.
And so now we come to the underwear. By the way, your underwear have been delivered. I don't see them. They're nowhere to be found. Who the hell would steal my underwear? Hope it's not some skinny guy. He'll be disappointed. So I write him, I say, hey, by the way, were you satisfied with your purchase? Well, not exactly. I never got it. Where the hell is it? It was delivered. Well, I don't see it. Then the lady writes me this nasty note back. I just talked to the mail people, They say it's in your mailbox. Look in your mailbox. Now, I don't know if you guys have been to my place. It's essentially a walk-up apartment building. There's a nice vestibule to leave a box. The mailbox is the ones, the little tiny ones that the post office guy opens, and you have a key to open. No way on God's earth you stuff a package with eight pairs of underwear into that mailbox. So I know just by her saying that they got the wrong place. But she's adamant that I should check my mailbox. So we're still fighting over this one. You know, it's only $50. It's not the end of the world. But, Kevin, this is two for two. Are we that incompetent every place?
Pretty much, yeah. Incompetence is rife. So did they ever find him?
No. They're still telling me I got him.
You know, one thing Amazon does that is appreciated is they take a picture with the delivery notice.
Well, that's what Federal Express did that with the floor mats. Of course, they left them on the front porch instead of putting them in the vestibule, which would have taken one more step.
Yeah. I got a story about that one too for you. I'll tell you from days gone by, but. Yeah, because I occasionally will, they'll deliver them to the wrong house. And so that picture, when I see the picture of the porch, I can either walk up the street until I see that porch or I recognize it immediately, depending on what it is. Now, that doesn't happen very often, but with an Amazon package, but it does, you know, it does happen on occasion. When you talk about where they put it, I once ordered I think it was a computer monitor online. This is back in my Wisconsin days, UPS delivered it, and the UPS guy cleverly hid it when he left it on the porch because you know you don't want anybody to you don't want some porch pirate to come and take your item. So he cleverly hid it. He put the floor mat on top of it, or the welcome mat on top of it.
Well, I think they actually, for the neighborhoods, like UPS, I don't know if they still do it, but it was neighborhoods that they deemed safe. And somehow...
Oh, yeah. No, I know they do that. They definitely do that.
Hey, I got a question for you. Somebody sent out this thing. I mean, we could tweet it out, I guess, but it's exit out. It's from the Free Press, and it has to do with all these nonprofits are making billions off the border crisis.
Oh, I sent you that. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, but, you know, I just kind of wanted to, we discuss and argue a lot, Kevin. We're basically on the same page on a lot of stuff. We don't know where we're going, but we're well on our way, right? I mean,
don't know where we're going, but we're getting there fast.
Yep. I'm just kind of curious on the, when he says the nonprofits are making billions off the border crisis, and was it you and I that had the argument/discussion Friday versus capitalism versus socialism, and I introduced the third being fascism, economically. And I think that's kind of where we're headed. We're not either...
Yeah, I don't know what day it was, but yes, I do recall that conversation.
Well, this has to do with these outfits that are getting all this federally funded, unaccompanied children program, and the major players here are... what the hell's the name of these places? Southwest Key Programs, Endeavors Inc., Global Refuge. They were talking, you know, lots and lots of money, and the CEO compensation, especially at the Southwest Key Program, was like $1.2 million last year. Actually, it was $1.2 million in 2019, $700 in 2020, $700 in 2021, and he's back up to $1 million in 2022. Without going into what they're doing and whether they're worth it or not, Kevin, I wonder, you know, just like, you know, I'll stick this on you. When you had the definition of competitive capitalism, whatever we think America is supposed to be, okay, you know, a capitalist competitive with some rules, which you got to have rules in football or baseball, whatever it is, then you let people, and you know, obviously our professor, our brilliant professor Hal, will always say, let people figure it out. You know, because that's the whole beauty of it, of that kind of a society, is, you know, people together making their own decisions. You end up with the right size nail, or in Russia, you might not make the right size nail because they're all making railroad spikes because they're getting paid by weight or something. You know, so in other words, I believe our system is the best. But I'm just curious, when we have you know, constitutions and laws and so forth. You have something that we have a separation of church and state. And obviously, you're not going to tax the churches because that kind of screws up that thing. And yet, we've gone from a church where people go to pray to maybe a school next to it to the place owning a football team that makes a fortune. Okay, that's a little bit of a stretch. Okay, but maybe not the world's greatest stretch. But let's, you know, we're charging a fortune for tuition. There seems to be a lot of money there, but let's kind of leave that one alone. But how do you get to a company companies that are this big? I guess what I'm saying, how do you ever give government money to a nonprofit that doesn't pay taxes back? I mean, that seems to me, in theory, how did we get here? Some place this big should be, there should be owners, there should be either people that own it, you know, like PTI where we own it, or there's shareholders that have a board that you know, allegedly ride herd on the owners or the management staff. What exactly are these guys, and where do they fit in, and how do they pay no taxes? They just pay each other. But it's not like there's no money there.
Well, and I would take it further and say we're looking at the not-for-profits, and we're talking about them and everything they make, but where do they purchase? So, you know, if they're responsible, for instance, for housing tens of thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people, where are they doing that? What rent are they paying? Who's benefiting from that? So it's the second layer that reaches back into the for-profit world.
Maybe.
And that's who, and we're subsidizing the for-profit world by subsidizing all these not-for-profits.
Well, Eric coined the term on the show. We got to get Eric back, even though he moved out of the neighborhood. I still talk to him. This management class. Now, obviously, if something happens at PTI, I mean, Dan and I are on the hook. You know, when I was trading, I was on the hook. If a corporation, you have a board that can fire these people. How do these people get to the top of these places, decide they're worth $1 million? Where is the licking stick on these people? Who controls them? Nobody?
Well, their boards of directors are responsible for controlling.
What makes you think what makes you think these places have a traditional board of directors? They don't have to. They're a nonprofit. They might, but do they? Who says they have to?
It's first of all, as a not for profit, it's probably a volunteer board.
Maybe. I mean, I actually don't. I guess my question is, I shouldn't. We need a. Where's Lou when we need him, or John? I mean, does. For like the animal anti-cruelty society or something, they have a board, but all the board does is raise money for them. Can they actually fire people? I mean, do they have to have a board? I guess, and if they do, does the board have the same powers as the board in a regular company? There's no who elects them. There's no shareholders.
Yeah, they will get appointed. They will get approved by the board, which makes it kind of the self-licking stamp, Some of them have process. Some of them just invite people to join. It varies from one to the next, and they do have some fiduciary responsibilities, and in many cases will buy the director's insurance to make sure that they don't get sued. But you know, that's always when I've been asked to get involved with boards, and I'm not involved with any at the moment. One thing I look at is what are they doing, and what are the likelihood that they're going to be? What's the likelihood that they're going to find their way into the news? I would not want to be, you know. So, for instance, you know, discussing a local operation that was in the process of building a new main building. I'm not sure, you know, I can see a whole lot of stuff going wrong on that, and I'm not sure I want to be affiliated with it. I don't think anybody was doing anything out of line on it, and I know the director, and she's, you know, I think she's a straight shooter, but I can imagine the kind of stuff that can go, you know, get involved with zoning, with you know, with purchasing, you know, all kinds of things that, you know, I just don't want to be, I don't want to be at risk on that. I don't want my name in the news for any of that stuff. So,
well, this is 2 years.
That's your problem as you deal with a lot of those boards.
This is 2 years ago, Kevin. I don't know if you, I'm sure you read this, but you probably not on the tip of your tongue. Endeavors is one of these three companies. 2022 federal disclosure form also shows that it paid $5 million to a company to provide fill-in doctors and nurses. That's what you're talking about.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. So let's talk about that.
Oh, let me it gets better. $4.6 million for consulting services.
Uh-huh.
Why can't we be one of these consultants? What do we insult on? This is a good one. $1.4 million to attend conferences. $1.4 million. How many martinis is that, for God's sake? $700,000 on lobbyists. Now, I think our problem is if somebody gave us $1 million, we should just give them $700,000 to lobbyists. We'd find ourselves getting money from somewhere. In 2021, they shelled out $8 million to hotel management company Esperanto Developments to house migrants in their hotels. Endeavor, which 99.6% of its revenue from government. Kevin, I don't know where we're going with this, but define this. I don't think any socialist country would do this. Any normal country, capitalist, would do this. Only us. I mean, this is nuts. If we're going to give the money to a hotel company, let's give it to a regular hotel company that has, you know, that has a board, that has people, that pays taxes.
Now we got to launder it.
Yeah,
we got to launder it through, because paying the hotel company, everybody's going to say, "Oh, well, yeah, you're lining the pockets of the connected company." And this way, we can take it to a not-for-profit, because we know they mean well. Of course, they mean well. They would never do anything that would be, because it's a selfless operation. And so, we're fine doing it that way, and let them pay the connected company.
Well, how do we get from letting the church not pay taxes on the little piece of property they have to massive football stadiums to this? Some are under the separation of church and state. How do we get there from here? I don't get it.
Well, you're asking me to get it. You're asking the wrong guy. I'd love to make sense of it for you, Tom, but it doesn't make sense. It's an awful, ugly construct that we have for doing all of this kind of stuff. And again, we opened with competence. Now, how many children they've lost? They've just completely lost track of a lot of the children that have come into the company. I think the number is over 100,000.
How do you lose 100,000 kids?
I don't know. They've gone somewhere, and nobody knows where.
Why doesn't
none of that would be, you know, trafficking. Oh God, no, that's not possible.
Why don't we get a president someday?
The whole thing is just a criminal enterprise.
The city of Chicago, how much money do we give to community organizers? What the hell? What is a community organizer? Is that a job?
Community organizer is somebody that you bribe to not bother you.
Yeah, pretty much.
Otherwise, they'll harass you.
Pretty much. Yeah. So what?
Our buddy Sarah Palin had the best line about that. When she was talking about being the mayor of her small town in Alaska, and she said, "Yeah, it's a lot like being a community organizer, but with actual responsibilities."
You know, she was on the Republican side and allegedly pro-business, but she dealt with all these oil companies. And I remember once she said, they asked her about that, and she goes, "You can't believe a word they say. You got to check up on everything they promise you."
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But she was no dummy. I liked her. I don't know whether, you know, she should have been vice president, but I really liked her.
She wasn't prepared for the office they asked her to seek, but
I bet she was every bit as prepared as these two.
Well, yeah, good point.
I mean, she had a certain amount of count.
This time around, Trump is better prepared for it because he sat there for 4 years.
We're hoping we're hoping for this kindler, gentler Trump, but boy, I don't know if that's coming.
Well, I don't know. Did you? Did you see the press conference yesterday?
I just don't know if that old of a leopard changes his spots.
Well, the problem here's where the problem's going to be with his administration. You know they're going to go after him again. Heck, one of the senators, now I'm trying to remember which one, I think it was Raskin, actually said it out loud that they fully intend to, if he wins, they fully intend to disqualify him based on whatever the insurrection clause is in the Constitution. Said it out loud. We intend to go after him.
Well, he comes with a certain amount of baggage. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, he always has.
Can we get somebody who doesn't?
You know, I mean, look, I can understand a lot of it. You know, I think he's got, you know, the self control of about a 6-year-old, but and the self discipline of a 6-year-old. So that, you know, he's his own worst enemy in that regard, but. You know, how would you feel if they set up this whole Russia thing, and you know it's a setup, and yet you have every bit of media and all of the opposition reporting it? I mean, heck, you know, Fari, who was a big MSNBC fan, would come in every week and say, "Now they got him! Now they got him!" You know, And so all of this stuff, and it's a constant harassment of every conversation he has, and he knows it's not true, and everybody's reporting it is true. How would you react to that?
Well, I'm on record as saying nobody in this country, no matter who you are, even him, should have a $40 million legal bill for anything.
That one isn't even the legal bill. Well, it was the disruption to anything he wanted to accomplish.
Well, yeah.
You know, whatever that may be, for better or for worse. I'm not. You know, this isn't.
Well, they did the same thing.
Just saying, if I were in those shoes, I'd be pretty pissed off all the time.
Well, they did the same thing with, for whatever reason, the last several presidents, not just him. I mean, who was the McConnell? As soon as Obama got in, he said, My first job is to make sure he doesn't get in for a second term or something like that. No, it's not. And I think the Democrats did the same thing to this guy. Is who all started this? I don't know, but it's wrong, Kevin. I know that. But you know, the dude, the reason, and I'm not saying you can't come out of the business world. Everybody comes out of the business world has some sort of baggage. I get that. I mean, if you're not doing something, I mean, anybody who's making decisions is going to make mistakes, but he has. He has an amazing background in terms of Russian people have sort of bailed him out a few times. I'm not saying any of that, but that background is there. And now, whether they were legitimate or not legitimate, I don't know. I'm not going to accuse him of being that. But something, he had a couple of buildings, and all of a sudden, a bunch of oligarchs bought condos in. Now, does he owe them or doesn't he? You know. I don't know. I mean, I just wish people didn't have this kind of background. I mean, I was going to ask you about in Chicago every time, and I don't want the place going up.
And I know you, and you've brought that up before, but that was not part of of the collusion allegations. Instead, though, he had a 2 to 2.5 year the Mueller investigation going on. This was all, and it was all reported as if it were absolutely true.
I'm trying to agree with you on this one, by the way.
Without anybody doing any of the diligence behind it, I would find that just a tad annoying.
I'm trying my best to agree with you here. Okay. I'm saying somehow or another, they tried to do that with Obama, but he didn't do anything. The stuff with Clinton was way over the top. How much did that screw up his presidency? And I didn't really care.
Not much, because he got reelected. Actually.
Well, but I'm saying how much of his time, how much of the assistance, how much did it detract from whatever good the guy might have been able to do? I mean,
although in Clinton's case, I think it made him dial back chasing the young women, so that's probably the biggest effect.
Maybe he just got older. Well, I guess, but now we're having this. Every morning I drive in and I hear about some group wants to demonstrate here in Chicago. Okay, and they go to court, and they always lose. They never get their permit. Now, do we think that judge is straight? Who's telling him not to give the permits? He's supposed to be somebody who is not encumbered by anybody, but that's not true.
Well, in Chicago, being a judge is the last bastion of patronage.
Yeah, pretty much. And, And a lot of them do, most of them do a pretty good job. But I mean, and it brings up another question. And the they're gonna have, the whole area is now becoming an armed camp. Our mayor, who's whatever, one of the guys was telling me his son lives over in that area. There's so many policemen there, and yet this mayor's going to tell me right to my face that the rest of the city is as well manned as it normally is. What, do you have people clone or what? How, does the guy even know how to add? How can it possibly be if you got 500 guys over at one spot that the 500 guys didn't come from someplace? I mean, how stupid do they think we are? But, I mean, why would...
Very stupid.
But my question is, you know, at some point here, and of course we're never going to get anybody to ask these questions. I mean, like you said, nobody wants the media voice. Nobody wants to be the Mike Rico anymore. Nobody to hire him. But my question is, how long are we going to put up with this? Thank you, sir. Maybe we have another. We all get totally disrupted by this stupid race car race. Yet there's going to be 50 people that made a fortune at it. The people they paid for the porta potties, the people that constructed the place, the people that served booze in the high-end tents are going to make a fortune. And the rest of the people are, you know, you might be some people that, you know, enjoy going to the thing, but the fact is, Kevin, if you've screwed up, well, less than $3 million now for the good of 10,000, five and 50 of them make money. Now, this convention, whose idea was this? I mean, now, this whole place is going to be an armed camp. People are supposedly boarding up places downtown. People aren't coming to work. For what? I mean, there's going to be 10 people that make a fortune on this thing. Why do we keep inconveniencing everybody for the same 10 friggin' people? I mean, what are we doing there? I mean, and it's going to be a big success. What do you mean? I think in 1996, I just hopped in a cab and went over there. There wasn't even any. And there probably was a metal detector, but was there even any? I mean, I'm sure there was a lot of security that I didn't see, but it was nothing like this. If you had any sense that this is what you needed, why wouldn't you move it? I mean, what are we doing?
Yeah, actually, I haven't really thought about this, but I wonder where the ideal place to have it is. The Republicans had it in Milwaukee, and it went off without a hitch, but I think Milwaukee was, you know, probably, you know, isn't necessarily an easy and obvious place to do it. I know why they did it. They wanted to be around the... around a swing state, but that, you know, more to the point, you know, maybe that was a little more manageable, maybe fewer people with a negative impact. I don't know. I'd have to look at that.
I'm going
to
say that if Trump was in office right now, and all the stuff was going on in the Mideast and all the other places that people feel they need to talk about, that the whoever the incumbent is going to get the demonstration. I mean, was Hubert Humphrey any different than Nixon in terms of what was going to go on in Vietnam and everything? No, they just happened to come from the administration that was there. You know, Nixon never once said, I'm pulling out of there, yet his convention was fine, wasn't it?
Well, he might have said that, but not related to politics.
Right. Remember the headline, Nixon remains firm on pullout. I think it's no matter who you are, it's the incumbent administration that where the danger zone is for disruption, right? And you know, and there's reasons. I mean, it's easy to be on both sides, not of Israel's right to exist and the fact that they got attacked, but how far they can go afterward. I think there's a lot of room for debate there. I mean, I know I'm not at all behind this guy Netanyahu and how far he's gone yet. I don't want anybody attacking Israel, and they're our best ally. And you know, I just think I don't think we should have gone. George Bush won, and Colin Powell and those guys stopped the advance in Iraq. They've had enough. We could have gone door to door and killed everybody, I suppose, but we didn't. You know, I mean, there's a time to call off the dogs, right? There's a time to put the second string in. Just saying. I don't know when that is. I'm not smart enough. I'm just saying there's a time.
Okay.
And well, and you can debate on where the time is, right?
Yeah, I'm sure you can. I mean, my mindset as it comes to wars is either don't get in or you just go in to win it as fast as you can.
Well,
the idea that we would pull back and say, well, that's enough, or that we need to be gentler so that we can win the hearts and minds you know, I'm kind of the screw that, you know, either go in and win or don't bother.
Well, did anybody think we didn't win?
Which win?
The Iraq won. We shoved them out of Kuwait.
The first time, yeah.
Yeah.
The mission was defined, and we executed on the mission.
Yeah,
that was the last time we did it.
And we could have kept going and busted up every, you know, we could have said, well, here's the one criminal in this one place, and blast the whole town he was in. We could have done that. We didn't.
Yeah. Tom, I'm okay with that. I'm not arguing that. It was a mission. It had limits, and that was accomplished, and that's, you know, that's fine. But everyone after that has been,
oh, I agree,
not clearly defined, and not well executed, and on occasion we probably did, you know, a little bit better. A few years ago, when they finally just said we're going after ISIS and we're not stopping until they're ineffective, but they're back now. So
oh, yeah, well, the it gets hard. I mean, when you're in one of these things. Well, let's go to break for SP Futures now down 6, NASDAQ is down 2. This is a pittance compared to the rally yesterday. So I'm going to say if you're bullish, I wouldn't be too worried about this. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. As you all know, the broad markets, especially tech, have been hot for a while. Lots of reasons. New technology, small fixed income returns, a lot of Fed cash, maybe some good management. Recently, however, the rates on fixed income investments, even U.S. Treasury, have risen from the very low levels. Treasuries are more attractive. There might even be some interesting bonds out there. Also, the bull run has some leading stocks with historically high valuations, maybe making long-only positions a little riskier. So what to do? I think the answer is flexibility. The market may keep going higher. It may not. It could even go down. Is fixed income a thought for some part of the portfolio? Rates are not zero anymore. You may want to protect some gains. Think about some rebalancing. Address some growing concentration issues. Maybe thinking about commodities. We at PTI may have a solution just right for you. Open an account at PTI Pro Direct, PTI's online trading platform using the Interactive Broker high-end platform. There you will find competitive rates and solid execution across all product lines and traditionally high interest on money balances. In addition, at any time you can seamlessly decide for fixed income investments to access Dan Janitas at Kratos Capital for management services. Dan and his team work tirelessly to achieve the highest returns they can, whatever risk category you are comfortable with. You can also quickly access my team for investment services and a wide array of investment strategies on the security or commodity side, protective strategies, concentration issues, or straight long. In one place, you'll be able to be flexible and ride whatever the future market holds with people you are used to hearing and trusting every day. Need help? You got it. Don't need help? That's okay, too. You'll have a great self-management platform with help always available. This market can change on a dime. I believe, like everyone else, having the right people there if needed is the way to go. Call me at 312-663-4310 or email me at time@ptisecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here, right now,
right now. Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howard Carter on the board. I know I'm giving all the stock report here. Kevin and Ricardo, I cannot stop looking at these two guys up at the station. They were supposed to be there for like 5 days, and they're on day 71, and they keep telling them the thing's okay to come back, even though nobody's really sure. They're smiling now, but I don't know if I'm sure glad that's not me. I think I might wait for the next bus, just saying. I don't know if there is a next bus. Over in Europe, DAX up 96, that's 0.5%. FTSE down 38.5%. CAC around up 13.2%, so kind of mixed bag over there. Asia, we have the Nikkei up 1,300 points. It's 3.5%. 38,062 is the Japanese Central Bank continues to make waves going back and forth, back and forth. Hang Seng up 321, that's almost 2% over 17,430. Shanghai, however, muted, only up 2 points, 2879. Nikkei soars 3% to clock best week in 4 years. So there you go, broad rally. And Mark, well, a broad rally here yesterday in Europe. So rallies all over the place. U.S. Treasury down 5 basis points, 3.87. The Bund down 5 basis points, 2.21. Japan up 3 basis points, 0.87. Oil down 223, 75.93, definitely now at the lower end of this range. Brent down 197, 79.07. Natural gas unchanged at 219. RBOB down 4 cents, 231. Gold, which has been moving up pretty much, is up 1360 today, 2506 back, sneaking over 2500. Now, again, this is the December contract. It's 2506. The August contract, which I think comes off today, either today or next week, is 2469. And there's about a $50 premium in December, which there always is, because you got to pay for storage, you got to pay for interest. We'll go through that someday. Crypto, we got that's up $1,300, $58,407. So they were 60, they were 50, and now they're back to 58,000, and all in like 10 days. Foreign exchange, the dollar, the euro is up to 109.9, so it's creeping. Same thing with the British pound, 129, creeping higher. Japanese yen is at 148. Again, that's the flip side. It's 148 yen to the dollar, not the other way around. Yesterday, we were up 554 in the Dow. We're up 88 in the S&P. And get this, 401 in the NASDAQ, 2.3%. Yesterday was a big winner. We're really not much news, except for retail sales beat a little bit. But that doesn't usually get a rally like that. But it was a good day. Ricardo, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. No Cubs play. They can't lose.
Morning, Chief. It's 6:40 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. 70 degrees right now with a high of 86. Breezy, warmer, and humid with sunny intervals. A heavy thunderstorm late this afternoon, possibly. Tonight will be partly cloudy, breezy, and humid with a low of 69 degrees. On the Phoenix, in Phoenix, 91 degrees right now with a high of 112. Sunny to partly cloudy and hot. Heat will be dangerous. Minimize outdoor activity. Tonight will be partly cloudy and very warm with a low of 90 degrees. Traffic in Chicago. Inbound Kennedy from Monroe's, 13 minutes. We're looking at 31 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lane Cook. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 21 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 13 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 19 minutes. Lastly, sports. Today, the Cubs are playing at 1:20 p.m. They play against the Blue Jays. Diamondbacks play the Rays at 5:50 p.m. And the White Sox play the Astros at 7:10 p.m. And also the NFL, the preseason games. This is preseason games for the NFL. This Saturday, August 17, we got the Bears play the Bengals at 12 p.m. and the Cardinals play the Colts at 6 p.m. That's all I got for you, Chief.
Kevin, what was I saw that game on in one of the emporiums I visited last night, and I got home, I couldn't find it. What was it on? The Boston game, or was it just over?
I don't know who was playing. I didn't pay any attention.
The Patriots and the Eagles.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know where it was. I didn't care.
You see the Bears schedule? They got. They're playing Thursday morning, Thanksgiving. They must be playing somewhere out of the.
Must be the Detroit game, huh?
Yeah. So they're playing Detroit, and then they're playing somebody at 8:30 in the morning on a Sunday. So I'm guessing that's got to be Europe. I don't know if they're playing. They must be playing a game in London or something. They're also playing. Christmas is on a Wednesday. Evidently, they're going to have a game like every night after that week. They're playing that Thursday night. So they got two Thursday games and one in Europe. Kind of weird.
Well, that is more than a little weird. So, yeah, I'm pulling up the schedule right now. Hall of Fame, Bills. Okay, so they get into it. Okay, regular season. They got the Titans. They got the Texans.
Is it normal to have 2 weeks?
The second week is a Sunday night.
Is it normal to have 2 weeks off between the last exhibition and... Unless exhibition is like next week and they don't play
the
game.
Yeah, actually it is. They wait a week and let college launch the first weekend, and then they come back. That's become pretty normal for them. Their problem in doing that and in putting bye weeks and in that, you know, and I think those are all probably good for the players, but their season is getting way too long, just like baseball is. And none of these people, they keep adding to the playoffs. And basketball does it, and hockey does it, but the problem is by the time they get to their marquee events, the semifinals and the finals in their playoff rounds, half of the world has moved on to the next sport, and so I think it's pretty self-defeating. Hey, c'est la vie.
We make it worse with the basketball this year when both of the semifinal series were short. And you're already in the middle of baseball season, and they waited, 7 days before they started the finals? They could have scrunched that earlier.
Yeah.
At least keep it going.
The Jacksonville game in week six is in Tottenham Hotspur Stadium.
Where's that?
in Tottenham, I would presume.
I don't know, but that UK?
Yeah, I think so.
All right.
Let's take a quick look. Paste and search for that. And
They're playing on the 26th of December, Christmas being a Wednesday.
Yeah, that's North London.
All right.
Okay, so they're doing that. And then, 26th of December, let's see what we have there. Get towards the end. What day? Oh, that's a Thursday. So yeah. They have Thursday, and then they play the Packers after that, but they have the, they have extra time for that. And so their problem is the short turnaround from Detroit to Seattle. At least it's a home game on the short turnaround. In fact, both of them are. So the previous game is in Chicago, and then the short turnaround game is in, am I looking at this right? Sunday? Yeah, Sunday, Thursday.
So they got two games at the end of December in Soldier Field.
Yeah, which is a joy. Well, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens with college as well, because now that they have their expanded playoff, they're going to have people playing games in December. Well, you know, if Notre Dame and the first round games are hosted, you know, if you're not one of the first round bye teams, some of those games will be hosted by the higher seeds on campus. So if you take Notre Dame, for example, if they're in the playoff, there's a good chance they'll be hosting a game in December. That stadium, I can't remember the last time they've played, they pretty much shut it down the week before Thanksgiving is the last home game.
Yeah, well.
So you know, and the weather can be okay in mid-December here, and it can be really, really nasty.
Yeah. Hey, what?
And it'll also be interesting because if you understand the sales dynamic at Notre Dame, we've talked about this before. It used to be that a lot of people day trip to those games. So you would get Chicago people, Indianapolis people, Grand Rapids people, some Detroits, some Clevelands even, Toledo's, all of the cities that sort of revolve around here. A lot of people used to day trip in for the 1 o'clock game. But now that games are at 3:30 or at night, it becomes a longer trip. And so the day trippers are less likely to be here. On the other hand, a lot of people plan weekends, so they got an alumni base all over the country, and people plan a weekend around a game, and so they buy their tickets well in advance because you don't want to make the plane reservation and the hotel reservations. You don't want to do all of that unless you have your ticket in hand. So that's how they sell tickets for those games now. If this is a short notice thing that people can't plan to do, I wonder how the ticket sales will go for that game. Maybe they'll get some of the day trippers back if they put it at the right time of day, you know, if they make it an early game. We could be looking at, a half empty stadium for a playoff game.
One of the people who go to these games, and I know we have buddies that like to go, and I have guys that like to go. When are people going to figure out that you become the studio audience? All I will say, in baseball, the games being a half hour less long, it's probably a lot more fun to go to a game now than it was 5 years ago.
Yeah, it is. I've been to a few. Yeah, it is.
But, I mean, it's football. They do everything they possibly can to piss you off. I mean,
they're getting a 2-minute warning this year.
Really?
Yeah.
What's the point of that? Another commercial?
Two more commercials. Two more commercial breaks.
Yeah, it's a. I told you about the night my goofball guys from the trading floor.
And I think it's fascinating when you think about that, because the reason the 2-minute warning originated was because we didn't have stadium clocks way, way back in the day. So the NFL put it in as a way of saying, hey, it's almost the end of the game. We just want to let you know. Let's take a break, but, we just want to let you know. And, of course, that has continued. Since it just as a traditional part of NFL games now. In college, what's the point? Well, the point is just to create another break. So to give everybody an extra time out and to get more commercials in there. But, you know, certainly the original intent of the two-minute warning is long gone.
Well, we had a guy, talk about a stupid story. My one of my buddies from the OEX pit, matter of fact, he just passed, I understand, was a big Illinois fan. So for a period of years, we would go to an Illinois game. And this year, he decided we should go to Ohio State. All right, so we fly down there. Kevin, it's pouring like you've never friggin' seen. We land, there's like no other plane landed at the airport in Columbus, and we walk out the front, and there's one cab, so we pile in, and, it, you know, I, of course, being 6'4", I grab the front seat, shotgun, and there's three guys in the back. This other dude comes out, hey, guys, can I share your cab? And everybody's going, we don't want to let this bleep in here. So I, of course, go, sure, because I'm comfortable. So the guy piles in the back seat, like, on everybody's lap, and everybody's grumping. Turns out the guy's one of the referees for the next game, the next day's game, and these guys are all Mr. Sports Junkies. As a matter of fact, they started the sports writers on TV. It was originally guys from the trading floor on TV at night on cable talking about sports. You never saw people more crazy on sports except maybe our gang than people on the trading floor. So they sit there, and all of a sudden, they're all ears, and this guy's talking. This has got to be 1991, maybe, Kevin, or something. And the dudes, evidently, I don't know if you know this, but for some, I don't know if this still happens, but in those days, the referee, the head linesman, and the back judge always work as a team, and you fill in around them. I would never have guessed that those were the three people, but I guess anybody can go in and be the umpire, I mean, or something. I don't know. But anyway, he said, these guys, at that time, there were 28 stoppages of play per game. This is 1991 or whatever. It's got to be more than that now. I mean, that's like a lot. I mean, when it counts up, I mean, I guess it's that many. Then he goes, but it gets, as the game wears on, it's not like it's 7 a quarter. It's like 5 for the first quarter, 7 for the second, the fourth quarter is like 12. And, you know, anyway, this was, you know, maybe that's all changed, but that's kind of a lot.
Well, that has to do, as much as anything, it has to do when coaches want to use their timeouts.
Well, I think they get commercial timeouts no matter what.
When you have bad coaches whose teams have to burn timeouts, then it smooths out the timeout, you know, the stoppages of play, doesn't it?
Well, yeah. My cousin dragged me to a Bear game when he was still healthy. It had to be, it was maybe 5 degrees, Kevin. It was nasty. I always got to go to the worst games. So the Bears are horrible, like they probably still are. So second half starts, you know, of course, you know, guy kicks the ball. The Bears are immediately 3 passes and out. You know, so maybe 30 seconds off the clock. The other guys, so they kick. The other guys, like, fumble. Then the Bears go 3 and out again. Then the other dudes, so there was, like, the Bears ran 3 plays. The other guys ran 3 plays. Somebody ran 1 play because it was an interception. Somebody ran 1 play because it was a fumble. It was something like 25 minutes off my watch, and it was like 2.5 minutes off the game clock. It's 5 degrees. What the hell are these guys doing?
Come on, guys. Let's play ball here.
Let's play some ball. But, Kevin, we've talked, we'll switch gears for a bit here. And I mean, I'll be talking more, you know, markets with Carl and so forth. But what do you, I mean, we seem to have, they're you know, it's as obvious to me as the day is long. I wish I'd have found, you know, I'd figured it out, you know, a few years earlier and just been longer for my clients. Now, yesterday, we did a great job for everybody. I mean, we weren't encumbered at all on the way up, and our puts were way out. We rolled some of them up yesterday. For being protected, we had about as good a day as you possibly could have in a protected portfolio. And we were, when we made money in gold and silver, because they were way up. So, you know, I mean, I'm not at all bitching about where the market's going. I just think on a numbers level, it's totally non-sustainable. When you start flinging, I mean, this NVIDIA flipped $450 billion in market cap in 10 days. Kevin, 5 years ago, there wasn't a company that had a $500 billion. Does anybody have an idea of how much the kind of money we're talking about here? And every time this happens, I'm very happy for my clients because they're making some dough. But I also know every time this happens, the separation between the wealthy and the rest gets bigger. And it, all of a sudden, somebody's going to be able to afford stuff that somebody else is going to go, how the hell could I get that price? Somehow or another, this there's something eerie to this, even though I always want my people making money. And we're, you know, even if we're protected, we're always long. I mean, you know, instead of maybe not as long as everybody else, but we're still long. I mean, we know if the market were to crash, we're not going to make dough. Fortunately, if everybody else loses, you know, $100, we'll lose 85, or I mean 15. But still, it's not a winner. But I just wonder, are we going to pump this thing? Is somebody doing this so they can get out before the election? Are they worried she's going to get in or he's going to get in? Or this? How do you go up 2.5% on a Thursday in August? I've never seen that happen without some kind of an announcement, without a war ending, without that's unconscionable. I mean, it's great, I guess. For us it was, and for our clients it was. But, Kevin, there's something wrong. I don't want to sound like Doggy Downer in the market, but it seems weird to me.
Well, you're sort of hinting at manipulation here, are you?
Oh, without a doubt.
So as we look at that, I don't know what to tell you about that, Tom. Is, wouldn't give me any pause or any surprise or anything like that to know that was that's what was happening. But in the meantime, you know, you've mentioned the article about the a few times written by the lady with the unfortunate last name, and as we've talked about it, it exemplifies the disconnect between the people who thrive in this kind of an economic environment and the people who are getting crushed by it. So you can tell me all you want about the macro numbers. You can tell me that we don't have negative GDP growth, even though in real GDP probably is really negative. But you can tell me all that stuff about the numbers, and everybody says, see, it's really fine here, and people just don't know it. And that disconnect is that there are people who are very severely hampered by this. We have record numbers of people working two jobs now. We have record numbers of, the credit card debt and credit card delinquency are both off the charts. And so as we look at all of this, you know, you're saying you're worried that it's not healthy. It's not healthy. You know, it's not healthy right now, and it's big problems. And, you know, it's got to blow up sooner or later.
Well, it did in 29, but I don't want to see that happen.
I don't want to see it either. But on the other hand, it is going to happen, you know, without some substantial change of direction. And I don't know if we, you know, and you and Carl can talk about this in a few minutes, because, you know, you've had that conversation all along, that it needs to blow up. You know, does it really need to happen to some degree? Do we need to have an event so that we can go back and sort it out? And Hal would be on board with that, you know, let's let people sort it out. That may be true. And if we were going to do a glide path, it probably really needed to start a long time ago. But there isn't even anybody talking about saying, how can we get this right over a period of time? You know, I would just be happy to see somebody say, look, I can put, we have here a 10-year plan that's going to start sorting this stuff out, and it's going to suck for a while. But as long as we implement the plan and stick to it, it'll work out. I just don't know if there is such a plan.
Kevin, anymore. I don't think...
If there could be such a plan anymore.
This is where
there was a time when we could have gotten there, but I don't think it's now.
Just let's... Real quick example. This is what... Yesterday when, God, it must have been 15 people. And the one lady has such a strident voice that I always feel like I'm listening to females on CNBC, but I'm really not. She just happens to have a voice that's like your fingernails on the chalkboard. But that's not real nice to say, but it's true. if Lou mentioned that he scraped his car, he didn't want to hit the pedestrian, so he scraped his car, which would be all Lou and hopefully all the rest of us. He thought it was a couple hundred bucks. It was like $1,200 or something, or $1,500 to get the side of his car. He said he had a dent. He had a scrape. All right, so if Lou wasn't Lou, and somebody maybe didn't have I have to believe Lou can write the check for the $1,500, not happily, but he does. Now, if somebody doesn't have the $1,500 and thinks it's going to be $200, and now puts $1,000 of it on his credit card because he only had $200 cash, and now goes further into debt. Now, because this outrageous price for painting a little piece of his car, does that mean the shrill people on CNBC can jump up and down and flip their cheerleaders pom-poms around and say the consumer is back, or the consumer just get hosed? Yeah, somebody just spent $1,500.
When the consumer is not back, you just leave the scratch or the dent there.
Yeah, but I mean,
and that is fine up until it starts to rust, and then you're crushed. Now you're going. We're forcing people into uneconomic decisions, what would generally be uneconomic decisions like that.
Yep.
And we're forcing them into it because your only decision is, what's the problem this week? And so you say, well, that's a next week, a next month, a next year, whatever it is, you defer it that. I know because of some new responsibilities at work, I'm doing that exact mindset. I don't want to hear about that. That's not that, that's a next week problem. We've got to get some stuff off the ground now. So I get the thinking, and are you deferring something that can bite you in the butt? You probably are, but sometimes you have to do that. But that's where we are now, is we're making the uneconomic decisions, which will be followed by the disastrous decisions.
I do think that at this stage, I'll fight with Carl about this. At this stage, within about 3-4 months, you could possibly turn the bus around a little bit without a massive disaster. I'm not saying a little disaster, but what's weird, Kevin, is that I spent 2 years in Chicago, and I was involved in this. I mean, the whole time I took classes in the economic school. You know what's so weird about this inflation and all the stuff that Milton Friedman wrote and these other guys, and I read vociferously, most of it, I was so interested in it. Why, I have no idea, but I was and still am. You talked about, an inflation that went to 10%, or Civil War got to 11% or something, or there'll be a place in, Zimbabwe somewhere where it got to 20%, and then they pulled the money supply back, and this was the fix. I mean, there's all kinds of examples all over the place in all the papers that Friedman wrote and other people. There's a guy, Ronald Coase, wrote some of this stuff. There was all kinds of people. But I never once saw anybody write an article where there was always some implied truth to the numbers, Kevin. In other words, if the inflation rate was 10% and your growth was 12, your real growth is 2, but nobody ever anticipated, nobody wrote about, I don't know why there should have been an implied truth in this stuff, but those guys were. It was just a different time. Nobody ever said, what if you pour 40% in, your inflation is really 12, you tell everybody it's 4, and you tell everybody how good they're doing. Never in any of the documents, right now you could look at all these gross numbers, and I could have, if you came on CNBC saying just what you and I were saying, I'll never make an idiot out of you because you're too smart, but I could just blow you over with these numbers. What are you talking about? Look at these job numbers, look at this and that, everybody, look at how fast we're growing. I could do that, okay? Or I could take the opposite approach like you and I are. What's happening to citizen A? What's happening to citizen B? You get a totally different answer, I think. And yet...
I think so. And the failure to understand that, I don't know to the extent that people either don't understand it. That's why I said disconnect earlier, because it isn't that people can't understand it. It isn't that, a lot of people don't because our education system sucks, but it is less so an understanding than just people not having any connection to the real world, and that's a big problem. And so now you can get all the people, the CNBC people or the politicians or whomever, who think everything is great. And the reason they think everything is great is because, their world it, you know, their daily existence is great, but they, you know, they aren't connected with real people. They aren't, you know, they don't live amongst the rabble. Let's put it that way.
So I thought it was pretty fascinating. We got to get to Carl here. But the Irish spending all that money to put grass field back in for soccer and only take it out for football.
Well, they didn't. It's not like they planted it.
Well, I know it's a.
They wheeled it, reeled it. So I would be all in favor of getting a grass field in there, but they just got so manipulated by Brian Kelly. It was, you know, everything he wanted, all the reasons he said he couldn't possibly win, because we don't have this and we don't have that, and they gave him everything, and then he stiffed him anyway. He ran off the first time he got a better offer.
It is unbelievable.
That was a year after getting a contract extension and a raise, and then he went back to the well asking for another raise.
What'd you think of Greg? I love talking to Greg because it's such of the younger mindset. I said, yesterday I mentioned the Starbucks getting $85 million just to walk in the door, the new CEO. And I'm thinking, I mean, that's kind of a lot. We haven't done anything yet. And that's old mindset. I get it. Greg goes, what are you talking about? The stock was up 20%. He already made his money. Yeah, but Greg, the stock can go back down 20%. He still gets to keep the 85. Oh, it'll never go down. Okay. I mean,
don't ever say that.
It's just, anyway.
Don't ever say
that. I know. Well, we're going to head off to Carl here. Kevin, thank you. Have a nice weekend, buddy.
That's a life cycle.
Yeah. Do we have Mr. Carl?
You do.
How you doing? What did you think of our last discussion?
Well,
not about the football field.
No. I'm assuming. Yeah, I mean, God, don't even get me started about the craziness of doing that sort of thing. It's kind of, you know what it reminds me of, though, is that, as I think I've pointed out on the show, we've got double-A ball team here. And it's a club affiliate. Hey, go figure, right?
Really?
Hey, we send you the guys here from South Bend.
You know what? I can't get away from Chicago. I deliberately leave the town. I go to Florida for 20 years, then I move to Tennessee without realizing that there's a blankety-blanking Cubs affiliate. Okay.
You can take the boy out of Chicago, but you can't take the Chicago out of the boy.
Well, that may be true, but you know what? They have you buy one of their mugs at the beginning of the year, and you get $5 beers for the rest of the season.
Oh, yeah. Hey, minor league baseball is a great deal.
And by the way, that includes craft beers. We're not talking about Miller Lights here either, right? Okay. And then on top of that, the tickets are like, during the week, they're like $13, and on the weekend, they're 17, and you're talking about, you know, five rows back behind home plate.
Cubs, they got some pretty good players down there, don't they?
It's pro-level baseball, okay? It's a great deal. It is one of the best deals for an evening of entertainment that you can find, you know, pretty much anywhere. I mean, we had a team in Florida, too. They're in the same league. But it was in Pensacola, and you know, this is 10 minutes from the house. That was, you know, 45. So, but they're leaving after this season, and they're moving the team to Knoxville, presumably in an attempt to get better attendance. Okay, the stadium they're building down—it's all the craziness that goes on in the major leagues, right? All of the different sports. They're building a stadium with a retractable mound so they can do soccer there.
Retractable mound.
I don't know what the mechanics are in this, but yes, because, you know, a baseball field has a mound, right, for the pitcher.
Not necessarily. If you go to the Chicago Park District where the high schools are playing, they bring out a fake mound and put it on there. It's like a temporary. It's like a artificial mound. They bring it out. Right. Somebody carry it out there.
But there's a mound.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so anyway, apparently the design of this place has a retractable mound so they can have a flat field for soccer.
What, like it raises up out of the ground?
Yeah.
Wow.
Now, I'm not sure exactly, don't ask me how they're managing the, you know, all the dirt infiltration into the mechanism. I don't know. I don't know the details of this thing, just that it's there. And then I think this is going to be a massive economic. I think this is going to be one of the biggest mistakes in the AA league ever because, you know, obviously the people that own it think that this is a good thing economically, I think it's going to be a disaster, frankly, because, number one, the ticket prices are going to go up. I'm sure the beer prices are going to go up. The people that live right in this immediate area that currently attend, including myself, probably won't, right? Especially not if, you know, if the tickets double. But then on top of that, the other problem is that UT, which is, you know, I mean, it's a captive college audience, right? The students are not here during most of the baseball season. If you think about it, what do you get? You get April in the spring, and you get September in the fall, and that's it.
The minor leagues don't even really play in April and September.
Well, and you don't.
Well, they do, but not much.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so you get the students in April, Carl, but you also have to compete with UT baseball, which is really good.
Well, of course. And so, you know, so I mean, you have to compete with the other sports, and oh, by the way, that is a really big deal around here. Okay. So, somehow they think the economics on this are going to work in their favor. We'll see. I'm not sold on this. But anyway, this whole thing, by the way, Chief, a yes or no answer will do on this. Because you're an economics guy like I am, all right, at the kind of a macro level. You realize that the political party that you have unabashedly supported the entire time I've known you, which is fine.
I don't know if I've ever supported anybody the whole way, but go ahead.
Well, you've always leaned that way, okay? I'll be a little more fair than that. All right. You've always leaned that way. You realize she's going to announce today that price controls, that she wants Nixon. She wants to be Nixon. Not only that, she wants to give all first-time home buyers $25,000 for the down payment, which is another form of price controls, right? Just on the other side.
It's just an inflationary call.
To defend myself, I have leaned and was an unabashed Democrat most of my life. I don't recognize this party at all.
Well, guess what? Neither do I. But the idea what astounds me about this we're going to go after the so-called gouging in the food business, all right, which is the centroid of this proposal. That is, the details are supposed to be announced today, but it's been leaked into the media and it's all over the place. The astounding part of this, and I know more in a little bit about it because I worked in this industry on the periphery when I was doing the software for Video Cart. And, you know, the network code and everything, which, of course, is a consumer products analysis company. That's what Nielsen does most of. Everyone thinks they're all television ratings. Actually, that's, you know, 10% of the business. IRI was their competitor, and they spun off Video Cart. IRI was in fact, the company that essentially put scanners in grocery stores and broke the Checkers Union by doing it. The funny part of this is that the grocery store business runs on a margin of about 1%.
They don't understand any of that stuff, Carl. You know that.
Chief, if you put price controls in an industry that has an operating margin of 1 to 1.5%.
If there's any price controls we need, it's to pull these patents off of these drugs.
Well, if there's any, well, okay. And by the way, if you want to talk about stupid, since I just got done ragging on Harris, I punished myself by listening to Trump's entire
with
Elon. Well, I actually didn't listen to the whole thing. There's probably, when I bailed on it, I think there's maybe 20 minutes of it left, and I'd had enough. I couldn't take anymore. I turned it off. But while I'm listening to it, one of the things he comes out about is that he wants more and faster, fewer bottlenecks, fewer things, and more new drugs. Didn't we? All of them, of course, will be on patent. All right? Well, I mean, when you invent something, they're on patent, right?
But why do... Well, so, where can we start here? The whole idea, I mean,
let me just tee this up, okay? virtually all of these supposed discoveries, when you really drill down into them 10 and 20 years later, end up being at best marginally effective, particularly compared against what existed in the first place. The primary impact that they have is they're way more expensive.
Without a doubt.
All right. So there's, you know, I mean, and by the way, sometimes, because there's such a huge monetary interest in doing these things in the first place, a decent percentage of the time you find out 10 or 20 years later that the entire thing was a fraud. Okay, and the Alzheimer's, the amyloid plaque thing is one of the stunning examples of that, but another one, statins, and the cholesterol hypothesis, which underlay all of this, okay? You find out later on, when you go through all of this, that the underlying work that underpinned all of this 20 years later, you go back and you reanalyze it and you find out that it was a scam.
Sure.
That it was and not an accident. It was intentional. Okay, the statin hypothesis, the whole lipid hypothesis thing.
But once you catch his fire, Carl, now your doctor no longer is independent. He's with the group.
Well,
and if the group says you're going to give statins to people, they all give statins to people. One flows right after another. That's why it's a big mess.
Well, not only that, if you buck it in any sort of a way, you'll have your ticket punched because the AMA will come after you and you'll have enforcement actions taken against your license. That happened a lot during the COVID crazy.
I was just going to say my doctor has a letter, and I'm not going to say her name or anything like that, came from the Illinois Medical Group or something, that if she came out against any of the vaccines and stuff, they were going to pull her license.
Yeah. Well, this was all over the place. And oh, by the way, if you think this isn't monetary, as one of the things I have pointed out for a long time, and I didn't even manage to discover this until more than a year after it happened, was a little palliative care hospital in North Carolina that figured out how to save 90%+ of those COVID patients that were written off. They were in ventilators and they had absolutely no way to stop the progression of the disease. They found a combination of drugs that actually worked. And it was over a year before this actually got out of that institution and somewhere where you could find it. And it's a $60 a month drug that is used by people that have sickle cell disease.
Well,
off-patent cheap medication, and it worked.
To get back to the wage and price controls, it's kind of a little story here, and I'll be brief, Carl. John's wife, Dr. J. Bridget McGrath, who was a judge and retired, terrific lady, good judge. She was running for judge, I think, or something, and then there was this political deal up on the north side, so she had to buy a bunch of tickets, right?
Right.
So she invites me as a shill. She doesn't want the ticket. She wants to have people show up so she has some backing, right? So I show up, and who's there but Alexei Giannoulias, who's now the Secretary of State. He was the Treasurer. Nice enough guy. And of course, you know, I always was a big guy and like to talk to people. And at one point, Bridget comes by, and she goes, "Tommy, knock it off. They think you are somebody." But I'm at this thing. I had gray hair. I look like I could have been an alderman. You know, I got the Irish look. So Todd Stroger, the kid, who gets the job because the old man croaked, he gets the job for like a little while and he gets voted out. He starts talking about zero-based budgeting. And I'm sitting there going, say what? But I actually work for two firms, Allied Van Lines and Pullman, that both toyed with the idea of zero-based budgeting. And since I was the guy who went to grad school, they wing it on me. Check this out. Let's try it out. And I'm looking at this. It's the most complex. There's nothing wrong with it in theory, okay? But when you went through it, it just was a disaster. And you started, and as soon as it made it to like the second level, everybody said, screw this, and you just threw it in a can. So Todd Stroger comes by, and he's shaking hands with everybody. He goes, "Hey, how you doing? Hey, what's your name, Tom?" And he goes, "What did you think of my speech?" I said, "Well, zero-based budgeting, what do you know about it?" He goes, "I don't know. I heard it's pretty good." "What do you mean, you heard it's pretty good?" I said, "Well, you know, it's pretty complicated." "Oh, yeah, well, that's why I got guys..." Something. I'm sitting there. The guy never even read the damn thing. I mean, I got to believe that Harris is uninformed. on this subject. She's not a dumb lady, but I bet she hasn't read paragraph one, let alone maybe not even sentence one, of the Nixon wage price controls. Because I was here when they had those things.
Chief, she grew up in them, so did I.
But how young was she?
She's 1 year younger than I am.
Okay, but you weren't... Well, I was actually going through them because we were doing this stuff. You know how complex those things were? And at the end of the day...
I get that, but here's the point. She lived through the results as a young person.
Oh, but no one's going to put two and two together on that. I mean, the thing is, they never worked.
Oh, well, no kidding.
But it was so complicated that if you couldn't raise the price except if the price came to you higher, at the end of the day, they were all the same.
Chief, you don't remember the gas lines?
Yeah, oh, sure I did. I was in them.
So was I, as a kid sitting in the back of the car while Mom was waiting to put gas in the car.
All right, well, I was actually driving the car.
I wasn't driving the car yet, but you know what? She's in the same generational slot that I am.
Okay.
She lived through this, as did I. So she cannot claim to be ignorant of it unless her IQ really is 70, which a lot of people think it is. All right? If she actually has a functioning executive function in her brain, which means you got to be around 110, 115. And if you're not there, you got no business being president of the United States. I don't care who you are. If she doesn't have that, then she's got no business being president of the United States.
They don't.
If
somehow
she does
or another
have that, then she's intentionally screwing the American public.
They're not. Barack Obama is not a dumb human being, and I'll bet he's a pretty nice guy. I mean, but the idea that you could have an entire redo of your medical system without addressing costs comes from somebody who never had a real job, never ran a company. I don't think he did anything untoward in his own mind. He just didn't get it. She's the same way. She's never had a job outside of government. She has
You're right on both those cases, but here is the difference. If you do not have the mental chops to be able to think in abstract, okay, and again, we're talking about the executive function here, and we're talking about where your actual intelligence level is. If you do not have the ability to think in abstract, you cannot figure this stuff out. It's not possible for you to figure it out. And if you are not in that category, you've got no business running a company, say much less running a country. And if you do, without that capability, you're going to fail. You're going to fail because you can't foresee the bad outcomes that come from doing stupid things. You'll think they're smart because it looks like there's a free lunch around the corner, and you'll go grab what you think is a free lunch, and you'll hose people.
Do you you want to hear my non-family show for a second comment on the wage and price controls?
Go for it.
My boss at Allied Van Lines, a guy named Bob Seeler, terrific guy, built like a brick bleep house, was one hell of a handball player. He kicked my ass constantly, but I learned a lot from him. A nice guy. He was taking one of those executive program things at University of Chicago. You know, where you went on Friday and then you went on Saturday the next week. Well, on Friday they just go out to the bar with the professors afterward, right? So right. They're sitting in the car, three mopes in the back seat, him one of them, and Walter Fackler, who's the head of the dean of the business school, in the front seat, sucking on his big stogie, right? So one of the guys in the back seat goes, "Hey, Dean Fackler, what'd you think of Nixon's wage price controls?" He takes a big drag on the stogie, exhales, and goes, "Well, boys, let me tell you, Nixon's wage and price controls did to the economy what pantyhose did to finger something." these guys were stunned in the back seat, going, "The guy's the D." He was not too keen on the wage and price controls. Let's just put it that way.
Do you think? you know, I mean, it's the thing that just gets me. All right, I mean, I get the gibby dat garbage that comes out of the left on a regular basis that appeals to a particular angle of their voting bloc that, you know, that somehow they have to fight. And by the way, the ratchet job that's on both sides of the political aisle that whatever thing your predecessor did that supposedly helped that particular voting bloc, you got to ratchet, you got to turn the crank one more time, right? Because the last one is now considered standard. Therefore, in order to get another vote, there's got to be another turn on the crank. Okay, I get all that. Okay, but every single one of these things that's been done. Okay, remember Obama, in addition to detonating the medical problem and blowing up the federal budget with it, and he did. Okay, remember what he told us would happen. This is the same sort of blind spot that Friedman had on trade across borders, that it would cause political revolutions, the peaceful kind, and therefore, you know, make the pie bigger at the same time.
But it did here.
Okay.
I'm saying, but that people, and I'm not going to defend him on this because it's one of his biggest mental screw ups, but. The fact is,
wrong.
Well, okay, he was, but I mean, we people of that era came from the U.S. of that era, and it was the Anglo tradition from the Magna Carta on. At some point, people will peacefully or otherwise, if something's out of whack for so long, they will make the change, and because here it happened. I mean. But evidently, the rest of the world isn't like us and the Brits and the Germans and even the French.
Oh, really?
Well, I mean, the idea that you would put a plant in Mexico, $3 an hour making Chevy pickup trucks, and 25 years later, they're still making $3 an hour would never cross anybody's mind in 1970 U.S. in any kind of a... Because I mean, you weren't that far away from the Pullman riots and the steel companies and
Chief, it did cross my mind even back then when they were doing that, when they were talking about NAFTA, when, you know, all the Clinton stuff and everything else. And the reason it crossed my mind is that, as I've said for a very long time, going back to when I was in business and running a company, be very careful what you wish for when it comes to the political revolutions, because for every George Washington, you get 10 Hitlers.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the thing is, all you have to do is read history, right? That's all you got to do to know that that's true, right? You don't have to have any high level processing going on in your head. You just need to pick up a history book, and you know, and read more than 10 pages of it.
Well, you could not have imagined, though, Carl, back in, I'm talking, I was in the guy's class in 1976. You would not have imagined. 50 years later, a country run by a bunch of drug cartel gangs and nobody making any money. What I mean, who would have imagined that? He couldn't have, but you wouldn't have either. Neither would I.
Given what we at the time were seeing was going on down South America and Central America, you know, not long after that, Sandinistas, Nicaragua, you know.
Mexico was close to us. It was making some moves forward. We thought they were different. We also thought China was different, and all of a sudden, but now the Z is—he's got his finger on him as hard as Mao did. I mean, nobody would—I would not have guessed that in 1970 something. Maybe I would have been—I was naive, but
well,
yeah.
You were, and by the way, so was Nixon, because Nixon was the one that started to pry that door open. Okay, that was dumb on his part, and then Clinton, of course, you know, was even worse. Clinton should have gone to prison for what he did with that Raytheon deal. I mean, that was wild-eyed, crazy stuff.
Well, they tried to buy. I tell you, when my cousin was in the mining business, and he, bright guy, big tough Italian dude, he went over there and they told him, "We want to buy one of every one of your things." And he goes, "We're not doing that. We're going home." And they went back to the plane. I mean, he spotted it right away. But I don't know that Clinton or Nixon knew that's exactly the way they operated, but. I guess you live and learn, eh?
Well, yeah. It's just, you know, it's just one of these things that it's one of these things that I look at. All of the different elements of what's going on right now. You also, you know, you have Raskin saying he's going to block certification if he's basically going to pull a reverse January 6th. Trump wins. No, he's not. He can object. Well, he can object like any other senator or representative can object. And then there's a procedure for this. All right, it's laid out in the Constitution of the 12th.
I can't stand the man, but if he wins, he wins.
I just say it. Point being that there is a procedure for this. There have been many objections over the years. People say, oh no, that's never happened before. Yes, it has. Again, you were sleeping in history class or you were smoking bong hits, one of the two. But what I object to in the current paradigm is that we have right now, when you look at the data, you look at the MTS. Okay, now, you know, since the last time when I was talking about, you know, 75% of income tax receipts were going into, you know, going into interest, which was an unbelievable number, right? Well, the new MTS for last month came out for July, okay? And now it's only half. Oh, my God. Okay.
Well, if you look at the full year, it's nowhere near half. But
well, but here's the thing. Well, actually, we'll see how that ends up, you know, when we get to September, right? Because there's also all kind of, one of the things that I caution people on in the monthlies is that, and this is one of the reasons you have to use a full year, is that as you get to the end of the fiscal, all the federal agencies play games in the last month. So if you've got, if you can defer paying a bill until the new fiscal, you do it. If you have money in your budget you haven't spent, you spend it. Because if you don't, zero-based budgeting, which they do kind of sort of use in the federal government, not really, but they kind of do. If you don't spend it all, you guarantee your appropriation will get cut because you didn't need it.
Well, you also, if they're going to build a railroad station for you for $5 million, you get the grant, you decide you can do it better for $3 million, try and give them the $2 million back. Good luck with that.
Well, yeah, but the worst news is if you actually don't spend the five, what will happen next year is you'll only get three.
Right.
Okay. So that's the, you know, there's a game that goes on there. But of course, if you don't pay the bill in September, you're going to have to pay in October.
Well, their total tax revenue, federal government, is 4.9. They call it 5 trillion, and they're, last year they're paying 9.19 in interest, so it's roughly 18-19%, which is a lot, which is a real lot.
Well, yeah. However, so part of the problem is when you look at tax revenue, you do have to split a couple things out because you know, and as I've talked about many times, all politicians love to conflate Social Security and Medicare together. All right. And they do that on purpose because the operating deficit on the Social Security side is quite small by comparative purposes, which means it's pretty easy to fix. I mean, politically difficult, but not impossible.
Just say 1.5 years older and it's fixed.
Actually doing that is probably the last move you want to make.
Well, I'm just saying in terms of how close they are.
Oh, yeah, but the easier thing to do would be to slightly further index the earnings cap, okay? And to slightly, and I really do mean slightly, like a quarter or a half percent.
All right, let me we got to go to break, Carl. Let me say, I don't want to say this to you, but a little clearer what Carl's trying to say, because it's actually pretty complicated. U.S. federal tax revenue totals $5 trillion, okay? And the interest on debt is 919, which I just said makes it 18-20%, which is different than Carl's number. But I'm going to be nice to Carl and say he's actually way more correct than that, because Social Security is $1.4 trillion, okay, with paying out. But let's say they take in, let's make it even, $1.4 trillion. So pull that piece out. So now you're talking about 3.6 $3.6 trillion of revenue if you take the Social Security piece out, and 919 interest on that. That's a whole different story, closer to what
you're
saying.
Well, that's basic. And the thing is that you take in 1.4 trillion in Social Security tax,
right,
and Medicare.
That's what I'm saying. So,
but you spend 1.2 of, you know, on the Social Security side.
Right. So I made it even. But how many guys would say you're actually that much more right than they are? because you are more right. It's not 18%, really. It's more like 28, maybe? 29?
It's about...
25, somewhere in there.
It's about 35 at this point.
All right, let's call it 30. So it's not... 40. It's not just looking at this thing and saying it's not 18. It's really like 30 because the Social Security is a wash, roughly.
Right. Well, Social Security is very close to a wash. Yeah. There's a deficit impact from Social Security, but it's not very large.
And actually,
Medicare is a different thing.
But even part of the Medicare. Now you're right. We got to go to break here, but to follow up, and Carl's absolutely right. Medicare, Medicaid is $1.8 trillion, but let's say with the Medicare or the whatever the piece of your payroll. Let's say a third of that is paid for. So that's another identity you should pull out. So every time you do this, the debt gets a lot higher in the remainder is what I'm trying to do here.
Exactly. And it gets much worse. And
yes.
Yeah. And it is getting worse.
Yes. S&P futures down 26, NASDAQ futures down 117. A little bit of a fall off here, but still, we were way up yesterday, but still, it's worsening here by the second. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. Tom Ricardo on the board. Carol, she didn't really say she was going to do wage and price controls, did she? Good Lord. I can't even, my worst dreams, I never thought she'd say something like that. S&P futures down 24, NASDAQ futures down 109, Dow futures down 53. Nothing moving all that much in the Dow. I mean, again, we had a huge update yesterday, coming back just a little bit of it, but so far, it seems like we're down a lot here, but we're really not, because yesterday, yesterday Dow was up 554 and S&P up 88, which is huge. NASDAQ up 401, which is really huge, 2.5% on a sleepy Thursday in August. It's about, I don't know how many times I've seen that, maybe none ever. The DAX, and these guys were way up a little bit ago, not as much. DAX up 81.5%, the FTSE's down 52.6. Kekaron's up 5, call that flat. So Europe is not doing much. Over in Asia, and these guys are way up, following us from yesterday. Nikkei up 1,300, it's 3.4%, 38,062. Hang Seng up 321, it's almost 2%, 17,430. Looks like they're somewhat comfortably over 17,000, nowhere near the 20 they were a while ago, but still better than they have been. Shanghai up 2, call that flat at 28.79. Still can't get back to 2,900. Bonds down 5 basis points, 3.88. The Bund down 4 basis points, 2.22. It is interesting that since Powell came out and basically said he's cutting next time, 10-year rates did nothing but go up until today. Japan up 4 basis points, 0.87. So these things don't always move the ways you think they're going to move. Oil down $2, 76.13. Oil's not been doing well lately. The Qatar Prime Minister urges Iran to hold off on the Israeli attack. So oil's going down. Brent down $1.91, 79.13. Natural gas down 3 cents, 2.16. Arbob down 4 cents at 2.31. We have gold, which has been fairly strong. It's up $19 today, 25.11. Again, this is the December contract. Silver down 17 cents, 28.24. Copper down 3 cents, 4.12. Foreign exchange, the dollar is weakening as we've got the euro almost to 110, 109.9. British pound, 129. So weakening just a little. Against the yen is actually strengthening a little bit at 147.77. Crypto, it's up 692, 57,783. And we have Ricardo, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Morning, Chief. It's 7:38 a.m. here in Chicago. 69 degrees right now with a high of 86. Breezy, warmer, and humid with sunny intervals. A heavy thunderstorm might be coming in late this afternoon, so watch out for that. Tonight will be partly cloudy, breezy, and humid with a low of 69 degrees. On to Phoenix, Arizona. 91 degrees right now with a high of 112. Sunny to partly cloudy and hot. The heat will be dangerous, so try to minimize outdoor activity. Tonight will be partly cloudy and very warm with a low of 90 degrees. On the traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Montrose, 21 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lane Cook, 36 minutes. We're looking at 20 minutes. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 17 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th and Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan is going to be 23 minutes. Onto sports. Today we got a couple of games in the MLB. Cubs play the Blue Jays at 1:20 p.m. The Diamondbacks play the Rays at 5:50 p.m. And the White Sox play the Astros at 7:10 p.m. And also there's a couple of preseason games going on right now. This Saturday, the 17th, for the NFL, the Bears play the Bengals at 12 p.m. and the Cardinals play the Colts at 6 p.m. That's all I got for you, Chief.
Did you get your Super Bowl tickets after winning the exhibition game the other night?
Who, me?
Yeah.
No, I did not know.
See, they're guaranteed to be in the Super Bowl after the other night.
Really?
Oh, my God.
I didn't even know about that.
Yeah, well, see, it's...
By the way, Chief, while we were on break, pulled up the September 30th, last fiscal year number, right? Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services last year were $2.147 trillion.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah.
But, you know, when everybody talks about that, regular people pay way more than Medicare does for this stuff.
Well, yeah, and this is the
when I say regular, younger people, sorry.
Yeah, the entire mess is a cost-shifting disaster. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean that's the gist of the issue. That's the bottom line problem is that there's the cost shifting, insanity within the current structure of things is where the problem is, and nobody wants to go after it at all.
Well, that's because the lion's share of the public, if they're not paying for it, it's not on the front burner. I won't say they don't care. What do you think of that thing I sent around yesterday? I found it very enlightening. I still can't believe that Kamala Harris said that wage and price controls. Does anybody think it worked?
She actually did. She was a little more targeted. The wage was not part of it. Price control, so yes. Grocery prices in particular.
Out of all the things that are actually competitive, grocery's got to be number one.
Any industry that has a 1.5% margin.
There's got to be, in Orland Park where I go do my shopping on Sunday morning, there's got to be 5 or 6 grocery stores within 2 minutes of the place. How can it not be competitive? Not to mention farm stands and everything else.
Chief, I know. I'm just telling you what she said. Okay.
Hey, I sent out that chart yesterday about the national health expenditures because, of course, some of my right-wing guys were all over the current administration and health care costs and I went through this. Anybody who doesn't think that this is a non-denominational problem, I won't go crazy here, but it's been kind of steady, steady at a pretty high level from maybe 2009, 2010. But 1960, medical care, of course, you didn't cure too many people in 1960, was 5% of the economy. 1970 was 6.9. So you're talking Democrats there, pretty much. 1980, 8.9. 80 to 1990 went from 8.9 to 12.1%. So that's a big jump. Say it ain't so, Ron Reagan, everybody's hero. From 2000 to 2005, which is would be who was that? Clinton? Or no, was that Bush? Bush won. I don't know, whoever that was, they jumped from 13 to 15. Then after that, it's just been kind of poking along. So if you were to go through this, every decade, there were Democrats that screwed it up and there were Republicans that screwed it up. There wasn't a fix anywhere in here, was there? Anywhere along the line. Doesn't matter who was the president.
Well, no, there wasn't. And that's one of the problems that we have today anyway, is that nobody wants to take responsibility for any of this. And it, as I've pointed out repeatedly, the largest lobbying organization is the medical and pharmaceutical industries within D.C. And the use of political hit pieces whenever anybody starts talking about anything related to that is relentless. Do you remember when Bush was running? They ran the Democrats ran ads of Granny literally being thrown down the stairs. an old woman sitting in a wheelchair being pushed towards a cliff.
I can't blame Bush for anything except when Clinton was in office, they recognized the problem, which was there for anybody to see, that the system was falling apart because of who paid what and what where. I don't want to go through that again. I've gone 100 times, but the idea that the high-end insurance people essentially insured the people, it was all bleeped up to the point where it was falling apart. And when the insurance company started demanding better rates in the hospital, the whole thing screwed up. Well, but nobody liked Hillary's plan, you know, and I don't remember enough about it to say whether it was good or bad. But it was a plan, at least. I don't know how detailed it was. Well, Bush managed to do, now he had 9/11 to worry about, Bush managed to pretty much totally ignore the problem that was festering for 8 years. That could be one of the best ignore jobs in the Oval Office in the history of the U.S. How do you ignore something that big for 8 years? But he did. Now, these guys come in and try a fix. They lose control of the fix, where all the lobbyists writing the things and essentially bowed down to the industry and made the cost side pretty much worse than it was when they started. And just shifted who pays what where around a little bit. And I think anybody who had any kind of a economic or business numbers that if you don't address the cost, you're playing the shell game on the sidewalk with the peanut underneath the three things, right? That's all you're doing. And that's all they did, is shifted all the who pays around, and at the end of the day, probably made it harder to get health care than before. I don't think it's any easier.
No, and you know, anybody that thinks that this was, you know, not all effed up to start with is nuts. But this didn't, you know, one of the things that struck me, and it's just because I've read all the history on this, is that, you know, when I heard that Harris talking about price controls, one of the reasons we have the mess to the degree that we do is what Nixon did led employers, because they couldn't offer raises. So that was the element that essentially married healthcare to your job. That was what caused it.
Well, it also reached
it wasn't the start of it, okay, because the deductibility goes back to like 1956 or something like that. So I mean, it had been building for quite some time. But Nixon's wage and price controls essentially cemented that.
Carl, I have
job market.
One of the listeners sent me, and he was maybe a year younger than me, when he was born, hatched, or whatever happened to him, at a little company, Mary Hospital. He was in for, his mother was in there for 6 days. The thing included everything but the doctor, and was $250.
Chief, I've got some of the articles that I've written, when I started doing series on this back in, you know, when I first started the blog, I had a couple of people that sent me written receipts that they'd gotten out of their, you know, personal safe deposit boxes and, you know, document files or whatever, from the same year that I was born. Okay? And then I took the CPI across that period of time and inflated it. All right, so what would it be in today's dollars?
Well, it'd be a quarter, or maybe to 20% of what they're charging.
Under 1,000.
Yeah.
And by the way, that was 3 days. That was 3 days in the hospital. That included.
Now that surprises me. I would have guessed that in your.
Chief, this is not garage medicine either. We're talking about epidurals. You know.
I would have thought your mom was in there for 4 to 5 days.
Well, maybe, but you know, I mean, I this was soup to nuts price, okay, including the care for the infant.
Yeah.
You know, the whole thing, right? Labor, delivery, care for the infant. You know, none of this. You're out of there in 12 hours nonsense like they do now, right? None of that game.
I'm just having trouble with the vision of you as an infant. We all were, I know. But
it happened at some point for all of us, right?
Yes, it did.
But, you know, it's just, it things like that boggle my mind. Okay, they are mind-boggling, crazy land types of things.
Without a doubt.
Because you look at this and you say, and it, if we got ridiculously better results, then that would be fine. But we don't. And that's the other problem with it, is that, you know, when you look at the statistics, okay, we went from something like one in 10,000 kids are autistic to now it's like one in 30.
Yeah, something. You know, and everybody who tells me it's not this vaccine, it's not that, I know they're probably right, Carl, but
I don't care what specifically it is. The point is we're not getting any, we're getting worse results the more money we put in.
Well, my point there is you got to stop telling me what it isn't until you can tell me what it is, because then I'll believe what it isn't.
Right. Right. I'm with you on that. 100% with you on that. I that's one of the things that gets me more than anything else within the current paradigm, is that we keep hearing, well, you know, it's not this, well, it's not that. Well, you know what? I don't care what it is or isn't. What I do care about is we're spending $2.1 trillion and we're not solving the problem.
Well, I can tell you, well, I don't want to go on the show, but
that's what I care about.
One of my buddies who passed last year, Judge Toulmin, you know, he was in good health, and all of a sudden he wasn't.
Right.
He spent 10 days in Northwestern. Nobody to this day has any idea what they did to the guy for 10 days. He came out, and then 2 months later, he was all messed up. And I don't think they didn't do anything to him. Well, except charge, you know. But hey, you know what happened?
They did something.
Yeah, what happened in one of the stories, and it always gets pinned on Reagan. I doubt very seriously if Dutch did this personally, but wasn't somewhere during his era his normal time for a mother in a hospital with a baby was 5 days, right? And people decided, well, okay, that's probably too long. So universally, they countrywide made it 4 days. That people were paying for or whatever. But the way hospitals, and again, this is, I don't know, Carl, I mean, you probably did some of this, as anybody who runs a business does, but my brother Dan is really good at financial accounting. I was kind of all right with that. But I really was fascinated by the guys at Pullman that were the cost accountants, which is a totally different skill set. And I got, like, really pretty good at that. And I'm not as good as those guys. They were real good at it. But the idea that you go from 5 days to four, in most hospitals now, it meant if the hospital was sized correctly for the community, it means they now had empty beds.
Right.
But when you ask a hospital how much it costs per day, all they do is tell you all the money they spent and God knows what. I mean, some of it obviously is necessary and some maybe isn't. Whatever it is, you know, if it's rat poison, or mouse poison, it's in the, they'll say, we spent $8 billion last year and we had X number of people stay per night, therefore it's X. And,
right.
And I sit there and shake my head going, you just didn't really say that, did you?
The more I waste, the more it costs.
Yeah, well, without a doubt.
Isn't that amazing?
But nobody will sit there.
By the way, in any competitive market, if you try that, you die.
Well, when I had my thank God it was 20 some years ago and I'm fine. I had the heart rhythm issue, everybody knows this, and I had one of the ablations at the time.
Yeah.
Kind of like took 9 hours. But, and I'm awake, right? So they didn't put you out, which was kind of weird. But the.
Well, they have to because they have to be able to see your metabolic stuff while you're awake.
Well, but now they put you out and it's a lot quicker. It's but anyway, I'm sitting there listening to this whole thing. So the bill comes, and this is 20 some years ago. It was like 110 grand or something. And I'm sitting there going, well, there's a lot of people in there. It was a big deal. I mean, it was just starting. It was a big deal. So I'm sitting there going, okay, there's the main guy who does it. If the dude makes $1 million a year, which he probably doesn't, and it's 1 day, so divide $1 million by 2. Anyway, I'm adding all this stuff up. We'll give this guy a week's pay, this lady a week's pay. It came to about 25 grand.
Right.
Even if you gave people like a whole week just for working on me for 1 day. It came nowhere near. Where do they get the 110? I mean, what's the overhead rate on this thing? For God's sake. What is it, five times? I mean,
They don't care. Look, first off, they don't care about that because, again, it's not a competitive market, okay? And secondly, they'll never tell you what it is, and they'll never let you get enough information to calculate it because, God, if you did.
Okay.
Well, you know, when Katie was in, and we'll just, I want to get your, we got a couple minutes, I want to get your opinion on what the market's doing here, but when Katie was in, talking about the research, I don't know if you remember her being in, because she was helping at, she was in Minnesota one summer, and then she went to Vanderbilt. They were working on some drug up there for, I don't know if it was Alzheimer's, but it was more like dementia. I don't know if it was actually Alzheimer's, but anyway. And she was, and boy, talk about a bright young girl. She was talking about, yeah, there's cost centers for every disease or whatever something somebody's working at. And right. Somebody will get maybe a grant from government to work on, you know, whatever. Say sickle cell, just because you had mentioned it earlier. Say sickle cell. Okay, so somebody is working on that. Now, if I want to give a donation and I want, you know, and maybe I have a, I just know that it affects black people, or maybe I have a friend who has it and I'm sorry to see them sick. I mean, most people donate stuff for whatever cancer it is or something or whatever disease our people around them get, right? I mean, right. So, okay, so then I lob this one off. I send them whatever, 10 grand for sickle cell, and then maybe I raise a little money for it. Or all this money's coming in, and this thing's like a cost center, and people are getting paid out of that group. And then there's general donations. Let's say she was at Vanderbilt. Somebody sends $1 million to Vanderbilt. Now, whether this particular thing gets any of that or not, she goes, this is really pretty complicated. There's all these little cost centers and essentially profit centers all over the place. There might be hundreds of them. And
right.
So now, if all of a sudden, now plus she's working there doing some stuff, and there are other doctors. But she's not a doctor, but she's, you know, doing some stuff. All of a sudden now you pop out a cure. And now, and the thing goes somewhere, and now some, you know, one of our, I was going to say sleazebag companies, one of our companies grabs this thing somehow and gets a patent on it. Okay, what happened to my dough? What happened to the government's piece? What happened to Katie's piece? What happened to the guy who went and got the original grant from government and spent all that time putting that together? They get nothing and like it, and all of a sudden some firm gets the... And Katie said, by the way, Vanderbilt or Northwestern or whatever, if you and I sponsor something for a disease, and let's say with sickle cell, they're going to put an overhead on it, and your building that might be 2 and 3 times what the people are making.
Right.
I mean, what the bleep, Carl? I mean, either people don't know cost accounting, or they ignore it.
Oh,
or
no,
they,
no, no. This is what happens when you allow government into this.
Well, they're getting stiff though too. They're not any part of the patent either.
No, I understand that. But here's the thing. What would have stopped me from doing something like that at MCS and then having it reflected to price? It is very simple. There were 99 other companies doing basically the same sort of thing we were doing. Some of those, you know, not an exact match, but close enough, right? I mean, a big part of our business was selling individual internet access to customers, consumers. Okay. So we've got thousands and thousands of people all around Chicago that are buying this from us. If we tried to jack people like that and say, oh, by the way, your price just went up by $2 a month, all right? That's nice. The guy down the street didn't raise his price by $2 a month. Guess where all the customers go?
Oh, yeah.
All right? So what stops that kind of behavior in a competitive market is exactly that, okay? It's that you can't do it and stay in business. You'll die.
Well, Nick at the Tripoli can't give himself $1 million salary a year, or the Tripoli goes under.
Yeah, that's the problem, is that, you know, can I do that kind of a thing? No.
Well, all right, so I got you.
Local hospital do it? The answer is yes. By the way, the CPI, I need to bring this up because the CPI and the PPI numbers came out, you know, over the last couple of days.
Yeah, we went over a little bit, but not enough, probably.
Yeah, there is... If you look at that data, you can't find justification for a rate decrease within those two figures. Okay, and the CPI, you know, for all the people screaming, oh, look, it went down. Yeah, okay. No, it was flat in the energy column this last month, essentially. which has been, and that's the one, you know, food and energy is what the Fed ignores, right? Supposedly.
Well, they're not supposed to ignore it. They're supposed to look at it separately.
Well, they're supposed to only care about core, right?
I mean, that's...
I know, Chief, yeah. But this is what we're told by the media, right?
You look at things separately, doesn't mean you ignore it.
I'm just saying, it's swizzle stick nonsense. Okay? But this is what we're all sold. And the reality of it is, though, is that when you look at it from that, you know, you look at the core rate, you look at where that is, the rate of change essentially flattened out. And then on top of that, you had the reports that have come out with the unemployment numbers and things like this that essentially say there is no squeeze from an economic point of view. And the reason, as I have pointed out, is that it is the fiscal deficit that is driving this, and real rates are negative when you look at the fiscal deficit as a percent of GDP. We're running a 6% fiscal deficit, and short-term rates are 5.25%. Well, guess what? That's a negative real rate of interest. And so there is no, and for all the people who say I'm crazy, the data is that we don't have a restrictive environment as we stand right now. When you look at the actual data that's coming back out of the economy in the form of the PPI, the CPI, the employment tables, they don't show that.
Well, it also, Carl, is, well, let's tee this up. Carl, hey, make a note there. Let's tee this up on Tuesday, because I bet, and I'll do some research this weekend. I know you're always doing so. I don't know when we have had a time of not, you know, something goofy going on, where we've had short-term rates 5.5, long-term rates 4, and the money supply going up when they're supposed to be restrictive, because something is really squirrely in that mix.
Well, because it's not restrictive. That's the whole point. Real rates are still negative.
Well, and the money supply is going up.
Right.
Well, mainly because of...
Chief, that's what happens when you have negative real rates. The money supply goes up.
Well, the weird part of it is, Carl, is because they're blowing up. They're blowing up so much wealth in the financial area, and there's so much borrowing on margin and stuff. The money is being created there almost faster than they can stop it, because they're actually going down on their balance sheet. They need to really restrict the hell out of it just to keep it even now.
I thought you just got. How many times have I heard you tell me that Volcker was wrong?
I said Volcker was. What I said was he had an ulterior motive, having to do with the savings and loans. They had nothing to do with his jet.
Yeah. Okay. That I'll agree with. All right. But the reality is that even though we had all these large so-called large hikes, we still have a negative real rate of interest. And until that goes away, you're not going to see this problem get addressed, and you're not going to see the curve go back to normal either.
They need to drain 2% a quarter for at least 2 years to try and get things back on track.
Exactly.
And that's not going to happen. And even then, then that might not work, but at least it would be a stab at it.
Well, that might not be enough.
It might be too much.
It wouldn't be too much, but it might not be enough. It could be better than what we have now.
It wouldn't be good for the market.
No, it would not.
Well, S&P futures down 24, and NASDAQ futures down 97. Carl, we'll tee this up on, because this is one of the most complicated mixes, and you're the guy I should go through this with on Tuesday. It's one of the most complicated mixes I've seen in terms of money coming in, money going out. And I think I'll explain again about how individual people can make money in this country. When I say make it, all you got to do is borrow money and put it back in the bank. You just increase the money supply, right?
Right.
And I don't think other places are like that. I don't know what it's like in Japan. I don't really want to go over there and find out. Anyway, Ricardo, nice job. Be back on Monday. Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.